The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Today I'd like to talk about awareness of thinking. Guided the meditation in that direction a little bit too. And we often have this notion that thoughts are our enemy in meditation. Well, if only we could get rid of all these thoughts, would we be good meditators? Or would the meditation go well? But that's actually a wrong notion, because thinking is an inherent part of our minds. There are some exceptional states of mind that thinking will be absent in, very deep concentration states, but that is not very realistic in our daily lives to experience those kind of states. Even for a lot of people in meditation, it's even in a retreat, it's even hard to get to those states. So just for practical purposes, we'll disregard those states for this talk. So in general, in our lives and also on retreat, we will be experiencing thinking. And since we are going to experience this a lot in our lives, it might be useful to actually befriend our thinking mind instead of seeing it as our enemy or something that we need to get rid of. And the thinking mind is just another experience that we have. It's what I said in the meditation. We have so many different experiences. Body sensations, hearing, seeing, emotions, and thoughts or thinking is just one of the types of experiences that we have. So anytime we become aware of thinking, we can consider it in that way. It is just another experience to be mindful of. Just like we're aware of the breath or the body or feelings. And this way we can also be mindful of thinking. And this being mindful of thinking can seem a little more difficult or less accessible than maybe, let's say, body sensations, because thoughts are a bit more elusive than the body sensations or seeing or hearing. And we need to learn to catch those thoughts. And what happens a lot is that we are gone in this thought train. And then at some point, we realize that we are gone in the thought train, and then the thought train stops. So we kind of afterwards realized that we were thinking. And I used to think that I was not a really good meditator because I seemed to only catch these thoughts after the fact. But and I realized that it's actually great to even be able to regain this awareness, and even if it's quote-unquote after the fact. Because each time we become aware again, it is a reason to celebrate. Even when we've been away in thoughts for the last 10 minutes or 2 hours or the last whole day, or however long it was. So this quality of awareness or mindfulness, I use those terms interchangeably, awareness and mindfulness, this quality is such a beautiful and special quality of mind. There's no other aspect of the mind like that. It is what gets us out of our ignorance and delusion, of course, together with wisdom, but awareness is this necessary component. So awareness is like turning on a flashlight in a dark room, and suddenly we can see more clearly. The clearer our minds are, the more we can see in a room. But every little spark of clarity of this flashlight is worthwhile and is helping us to see more and be more present for our lives. So just realizing that can maybe help us cultivate a little bit more joy or celebration or gladness for awareness arising, even if it's just for a brief moment. And then Bhikkhu Anālayo, a Western monk, he says, a mind in which mindfulness is well established has a distinct flavor and texture, such as being open, receptive, flexible, alive, centered, clear, and calm. End quote. So a mind that is mindful is different from a mind that is not mindful or unaware. And when we start to check that, like, oh, what is it actually like to be aware? What is it actually like when awareness comes back and you can check what it was like when there was no awareness? What does it feel like? What's the quality of the mind in those two different scenarios? And can you discern this openness and receptivity, flexibility, the aliveness, the centeredness, clearness, and calmness that Analio was talking about? Are any of those qualities present when you are aware? And even reflecting on these beautiful aspects of mindfulness might be able to elicit some gratefulness maybe, or some gladness of mindfulness coming back. And this, if we manage to cultivate this happiness, gladness, or however we experience it, when mindfulness comes back, can help us to create a positive feedback loop for mindfulness to come back again and again. It's like training the mind in a way to be more and more aware, because the mind starts to associate the mindfulness or the awareness with gratefulness or celebration or joy. And this is a process, because we are often conditioned to be aversive when mindfulness comes back, because we think that, oh, I should have been mindful during all this thinking. So it's kind of a process to switch from being aversive when mindfulness comes back to seeing the joy in that. And it doesn't really matter what happened a moment ago, or what happened over the last 10 minutes or the last hours. What matters most is that we're present here and now again. We are aware of what's happening right now. That's what matters most in this moment. So sometimes, after we emerge from being lost in thought, is that the mind is aware of what the contents of the thoughts was. And maybe it was a whole story unfolding, or a daydream about a trip that we like to take, or something that happened at work that we were worrying about. So that can happen. And sometimes it can happen that the contents of the thought is not so much on the foreground, but the emotional charge is more on the foreground. Maybe it was a sad thought, and now you feel mostly the sadness, or a joyful thought, and now you feel more of the joy and not so much of the contents. And sometimes something completely new is on the foreground. So sometimes we feel we can experience the content on the foreground. Sometimes it's more of a feeling or emotional charge that's on the foreground. And sometimes it's something completely new, like a sound sometimes triggers me out of my thought train, and then the sound might be more on the foreground, or a body sensation, like an itch suddenly comes up, and that triggers me back into awareness, and then that's more on the foreground. So this is one way of being aware of thoughts, is after they've arisen and we are back in awareness. And sometimes we can be aware of thinking while it is happening, so not like afterwards. We can then be aware of this process of thinking happening. This can often include the contents of the thoughts. We can be aware of a whole thought train coming through, without getting lost in it, that's possible. Or sometimes it's just a part of the thought train that we can follow, and then we get lost in it. That can also happen. And maybe the mind needs to be a little bit more stable in order to not get lost in the contents of thoughts and be able to follow what is happening. But just knowing that is a possibility, to be able to follow the thoughts while they're going on can help us to recognize when that is actually happening, when we are aware of a thought process happening while it is happening. And when we are following a thought train or a thought process, then we can make a choice of being aware of the process itself of thinking instead of the actual contents of it. Like, what does the thinking process actually feel like? How does it happen? What happens when we think? And just a little bit of investigation in what is the thought process actually like? And we can try to let go of the actual story that is going on and focusing on that process. See if we can be a little less involved in the story. And what then sometimes can happen when we are aware of thinking while this is happening is that the thoughts just disappear. That's as if mindfulness just poofs them away. And like you might have poofed clouds away in the sky as a child. Mindfulness just kind of seems to poof those thoughts away, which is perfectly fine. We don't have to like go after the thoughts to try to fabricate them again or try to see, oh yeah, I was supposed to follow this thought process. If they're gone, they're gone. It's fine. We don't have to hold on to them. There's no need to finish our thoughts, especially not in meditation. Because most of the thoughts that we are thinking are not that useful. Especially in meditation, they're not that useful. And Joseph Goldstein once said, I heard people quote him, that it's something along the lines of, when we are meditating, no thought is worth thinking. So you don't have to think anything. And you will be thinking, of course. You can't really stop that. But it's not worth thinking any thought. So sometimes when the thought disappears, you might feel a little bit like, oh, what am I now supposed to be aware of? And in that case, we can either be aware of this question that arises, what to be aware of, or we can focus on this little bit of silence in the mind when there's this temporary space of no thought arising, except for maybe this question. So we can be aware of thinking after the fact, as well as during the thinking process. And a very interesting thing is that we can also be aware before thoughts actually ripen into content. So I'll explain a little bit of what I mean by that. So when the mind is really settled, like can happen on a meditation retreat, and for some people it might even happen in daily life, but if the mind is really settled, there can be the experience of seeing a thought being formed, like an energetic kind of thought is being formed, but before it actually forms into something coherent, before it kind of forms into content that the mind actually knows what the thought is going to be about, the mind can see the thought, and by seeing it, the thought just vanishes. So the mind never really knows what the thought was about, and never really knows the content of the thought. It's like this thought energy forming. And by seeing the formation of this energy, the mind just lets go of it. And this is really interesting, but it is not something that we can force. It is something that happens when a meditation deepens. And it won't always happen, of course. It's not something to get attached to. It's just something to experience when it's happening. I just wanted to name it because it is a way of experiencing thoughts. So these are three stages in which we can be aware of thinking. Just after the fact, during the thinking process, and even before the thoughts open up into actual content. And now I would like to look a little bit more at the texture of thoughts. The way in which thoughts can form, because thoughts can form in different ways. And one way is that thoughts can be like voices talking to you, like your own voice or a stranger's voice or someone you know. It can be a narrator going on, like narrating everything that's happening, like the Muppets. Like, oh, I'm going to the kitchen now, taking this from the fridge, putting it on the plate, looking out the window, etc. And even also with this, sometimes we become aware of this narrator or other voices, and then it just stops. And sometimes we can just be aware of the whole narration while it is happening. Either way is fine. We can just be aware of it, be aware of it stopping, or be aware of the whole voice happening. Or a voice that's planning stuff. I've just moved and I had some furniture that I needed to assemble. And I really noticed this planning mind, like this voice talking about what needs to go first, what's next, how to hold this, what screw to use, and this whole planning mind around getting this furniture assembled. And that's actually very useful, of course, when you're actually putting the furniture together, you need to plan a little bit, like, oh, what do I need to do? So it's really helpful in our daily lives to get things done. It's less useful, though, when we are meditating and we are getting into this planning mode. Because, the planning can wait to a later moment. And like Joseph Goldstein says, it's not worth thinking about anything during meditation. So these are some ways of thoughts manifesting as voices. And another way thoughts can manifest is as images. Maybe we're seeing a certain scenario with our mind's eye. Or we see a little movie playing. Or like when we dream in the night, it might be a way of thinking in images, actually. And I recently heard that when there was black and white television back in the day, people were thinking and dreaming in black and white. And now that there's color television, people are thinking and dreaming in color again. Self-reported, of course. And so far, I've talked about these three different stages that we can become aware of thoughts and about how thoughts can manifest as voices or as images. And maybe for some people, the other senses can also have form as thoughts, maybe kinesthetic, for example. If you're a really kinesthetic person. And a third aspect that I'd like to talk about is the flavor of thoughts. Because thoughts can be pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And when they have a pleasant or unpleasant flavor, we can often experience also some sort of mood, emotion, or feeling. And moods, emotions, and feelings are also part of the experience of the mind in the Buddhist way of thinking. So thinking, moods, emotions, feelings are all part of the mind. And these all influence each other. Like sometimes our thoughts might spark emotions or moods to come up. Like when suddenly a thought of this conflict you have with someone comes up, then we might get this emotion right away as well. And sometimes it's the other way around, that the emotions or the moods that we experience spark more thinking. Like when we feel joyful, then maybe some thoughts around having a good time with our friends come up. So these are really intertwined thoughts and emotions. And when we experience unpleasant feelings, it might be good to talk about a little bit. It can happen that our thoughts make these emotions and feelings even worse. Because emotions can stick around longer if we start to get into this thought train, these perpetual thoughts around the emotions. And in that case, it can be really useful to become aware of this process, of this whole cycle of thoughts getting into worsening emotions, getting back into more thinking and more worse emotions, and really be mindful and realize that our thoughts are not so helpful, maybe. What we could do is pay more attention to what the emotions actually feel like without the story that the thoughts are telling us all the time. What does it feel like in the body? And maybe sometimes it can even be helpful to pay attention to the process of thinking instead of the contents of the thoughts. That can also be an entrance next to just feeling the body. It's kind of two ways we can go with, and we can experiment what works for us. It's both ways are a little bit about disengaging from the story, whether we are paying attention to the body or we're paying attention more to the process of the thinking than the story. And what we can also do is become really interested in the whole process itself. Like, what is it actually like that? How these thoughts are affecting my mood and my emotions? And what is the effect on the body? What is the effect on the mind, on the mood and the emotions, and on the process of thinking? Like, if it's not too bad, if it's not like we're super like in it and overwhelmed with it, it might be interesting to if we explore that. Like, how does this whole process work? And then another thought comes up around this conflict that you have, and then more emotions come, and you can really see that process happening. That can be really interesting. So it's not about pushing away our thoughts or emotions. It is about the observing, the learning, the growing, seeing more clearly what is happening, and seeing how thoughts and emotions influence each other, are interrelated. So the thinking mind is a very rich place for practice. And since we all think a lot during the day, we can always check in. Is there thinking present? What kind of thoughts are there? Is it a voice or an image? Is it pleasant or unpleasant? Is thinking giving rise to moods or emotions? Or are moods or emotions giving rise to more thinking? What is actually the moment that I usually catch thinking? Is it before, during, or after the fact? And in that way, we can become more familiar with our thinking mind. And we can start to see the thinking mind more as a friend that we can learn from, instead of as an enemy that we need to get rid of. Because the thinking mind also has a lot of good stuff for us. In meditation, we might want to cultivate, like, oh, it's not necessarily worth thinking, but in general in our lives, our thinking mind helps us to navigate our lives, to plan our lives, to plan things in our lives, to reflect, to develop wholesome qualities, etc., etc. And that can be helpful because if we see also the positive side of the thinking mind, we might we might cultivate a little bit more friendliness towards it. And what would we be without the thinking mind? We would be quite lost in life. We really need this aspect of the mind to function. So when we are in meditation and thoughts arise, we can maybe be a little kinder towards those thoughts. They are basically just doing their job. And without them, we would not be functional human beings. And so that doesn't mean that we're going to indulge in thoughts, of course, which we also sometimes do. Sometimes there's this really nice fantasy and we just go with it and we just want to just not think about anything else, not meditate. We just want to go with this nice fantasy. And that would be indulging in thinking. That would be the other extreme. But it means that if we see the positive side of thinking, we might not be as aversive towards thoughts anymore. And we can still have an intention to let go of thoughts during meditation, but then might be less attached to the actual letting go happening, Because if we're attached to thoughts, have to let go, thoughts have to, you know, be gone, then we're stuck in this aversion again. So yeah, it is a way of cultivating more tolerance towards negative thoughts, to realize how they are helping us as well in our lives. And even negative thoughts or difficult thoughts, we can maybe try to not get rid of them necessarily, but maybe open just a little bit towards them. Even negative thoughts are trying to help us, trying to do something for us. So if we can see that, that can help us let thoughts move through us instead of trying to push them away. Because pushing them away often makes them a little bit more stickier. So letting them move through us, allowing them, so to speak, can help them stick less through us, to us. So I'd like to end with a poem by Rosemary Martola Trummer. A pomegranate, tennis racket, wide open lily, basically anything can act as a Trojan horse to get those old ideas close to me. And dang, I'm confronted again with all the ways I've let down the world and all the ways I could have, I should have done better. How many times have I tried to escape these thoughts? I've run mountain races and written thousands of pages and wept a spring flood and confessed and bled, and still they find a way back to me. Sometimes they come knives drawn, but more often they come wearing fluffy robes and slippers, making themselves at home. I cornered one today, looked it right in the eye. What, I said, what do I have to do? It shook its head and said, all I ever wanted was for you to say thank you. There's some time for sharing questions, reflections. Also, feel free to put it in the chat if you don't want to be on the recording. Also, be fine. Anything you'd like to share? Questions? If there aren't any questions or sharings, then we could also do a little thought game that I learned from Guy Armstrong. And that involves that we go back inside a little bit again and find our meditation posture, and we can take a few breaths. A few deeper breaths. And then what we'll do is let go of the breath and just wait until the next thought arises. And then we'll be aware of that thought. We can do that again. Take a breath. And then wait until the next thought arises. Be aware of that thought, and possibly any subsequent thoughts that arise. We can be aware of possibly getting lost in the thoughts again and coming out of it. And we can take another breath and be aware of that first thought arising. Every time you'd like to play a little bit with thinking, the thinking mind, you can play this thought game of pausing and letting the first thought arise and following the thoughts from there. Question came in, but before I respond to that, I'm curious if you have any reflections or questions about the thought game, or what it was like for you to do this exercise. Yeah, Audrey.
I notice that it's thoughts after thoughts, and they are even, I don't know, I have the feeling that they are at the same time several thoughts, and it's really, it's overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah, it can be a lot. And it's like, it seems like so many thoughts at the same time, different layers of thinking. And, but the good thing is you're aware of it. Even if it's a lot, there's awareness of it. And if it is overwhelming, then you could choose to stay with your anchor for a little longer and not pay as much attention to the thoughts or the thinking process. Just be with the anchor. It could be the breath or the sounds or the touch points of the body, for example. And just let them be in the background. Just not pay any attention to them for a while. And then doing that a little more even can help to settle the thoughts a little bit as well, so that it's not as much and as overwhelming. So that's one way. And another way would be to just be with the thinking and the unpleasantness of the amount and the overwhelm. That could be, if it's not too much, it's not like really getting you too much, then that would be an option too.
And when it's too much, because I often fall into ruminations and I feel really the pain of those thoughts. And so it's so hard that I switch to metta and I don't have any other answer. I don't know if it's right to do that, because sometimes it lasts several hours without stopping. And so.
Yeah, that's perfect. Going to metta. Yeah, that's metta is also a way of settling the mind. So it's similar to using an anchor. And it has the benefit of also eliciting these warm-hearted feelings. So you have both the settling and the warm-heartedness. So it's a really good way of dealing with this. Yeah, if that's helpful for you, for sure, continue with that.
But even when I practice metta, when they are really strong ruminations, I can't help wanting to get rid of the thoughts, and after wanting to get rid of the painful feelings, because I really feel the pain in my body, you know, so it's painful sensations. And so, yeah, even metta sometimes feel that it's not enough. So,
yeah, well, we can only do so much, right? And sometimes there's just a lot going on in our lives, and there's just a lot of pain, and both bodily and mentally, and there might not be like a, you know, easy solution to it. So we can try to gradually train our minds with things like metta, using an anchor, for example. Yeah, and that might be all we can do, or maybe there's other modalities that you are familiar with that could help, other spiritual techniques or things from therapy or something like that. You're welcome to use your whole toolkit, even in meditation. You don't have to like stay with only Buddhism if it's a lot and a lot of pain comes up. You really be welcome to use all the tools you have to deal with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And the difference between thoughts and ruminations would be that it's not like ruminations are a form of thinking. So it's like a tree is a form of a plant, just like a flower is also a plant. They're all plants, but so ruminations are a form of thinking, just like planning mind or any other type of like the narrator or yeah. So we can deal with, in general, if it's not too much, we can deal with ruminations by what I just said, going to the anchor, for example, or really, if it's not too much, we can try to be with it and also be with the unpleasantness of it if it's unpleasant. Yeah. And of course, metta would always be fine too, or a good way to deal with difficult things. Yeah. Any other questions or comments or sharings?
I sometimes feel that the meditative path, it has a lot to do with increasing one's tolerance for discomfort. That's what it feels like, or that's my journey anyway. But I found what you said very helpful about being more, or kind of giving attention to the body and what's happening in the body when emotions come up. That's very helpful.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
And not just feeding it, you know, not continuing the story or becoming aware that there's a story there. That seems to me to be really helpful too.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
Thank you.
For sure. And I agree with that we're expanding our ability to be with discomfort in meditation. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the really nice thing of this type of meditation, the Vipassana insight meditation tradition, is that it actually, that's one of the things that happens when we do this type of meditation, is that we are starting to become more resilient and we start to be able to be more present for also unpleasant things. So we can be more aware of our presence for our whole life, not only for the pleasant things, but also in the unpleasant parts of our lives. Another part of the path is to cultivate more of the wholesomeness, which doesn't have to necessarily be pleasant, but that's another part of our practice, because the whole, just being aware is very wholesome. This whole cultivation of awareness and mindfulness is like a super wholesome thing to do.
I think also your contrast between what it feels like when there is no awareness, or you're not being mindful, and what it feels like when there is. I mean, there's such a contrast there. And particularly, I mean, not when I'm trying to meditate, but when I'm just out in the world. And I can get lost so easily in that, in the unmindfulness, but then I sometimes remember to come back, and it does feel so much better.
Yeah. And that's really good to realize, because that helps us with the positive feedback loop of getting back. Yeah. Thanks for sharing.